Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Have you ever tried to get talk radio on your AM dial and can't find anything at all? This is J. Michael Michael for LA Talk Radio, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. So why don't you do this? Why don't you hook up to LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is a .com, and we've got it all from talk to sports to music to, well, talk. And right now is a new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block, so sit back, crack that wine, grab that box of chocolates, join Bobby Jean Bell, and it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah, that sounds like something out of Philip Marlowe.
Well,
or the front page, one
no,
of the two.
No, it's actually, you know this man who owns this orchestra. This is from Joni Crawford's orchestra.
Ooh.
Really?
Really. And we met him
wow.
last year.
Yeah,
at
last
the
year at the
Festival.
Cowboy Festival, sure.
Yes. Well, I met him years
know.
And years and years ago.
I didn't
was
know
like
he
12.
Had an orchestra.
Yeah. He's got a swing orchestra. They're very good,
wow.
as you can tell.
Yeah.
As you can
Dynamite.
Tell. Well, this is LA Talk Radio, of course. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host in studio with your other favorite host, Bob Brill.
Hey, me.
From KNX 1070.
I'm back.
Radio.
I'm front. I'm left to right.
He is. Bob's a good guy. Bob's a good guy. Knowing Bob is like a piece of poetry.
Speaking of which, you got a new poetry book out.
I did.
Yes.
I did have one.
That's all you get. I'm really looking forward to reading this.
Yeah, it's like 48 pieces yeah. of stuff that's been around since 1967.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 85 pages. It only took you 56 years to write it.
I know.
And we're not joking.
It did take them 56 years to write it.
Trust
me when I say not everything in that book is sterling. So right now we are going to go, of course... We are going to go to our most favorite roving reporter, Henry Park.
There
Good
he is.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the prairie schooners at sea. Let's go to press. Item one. The big news is Highwaymen, the new Netflix movie about two Texas Rangers who came out of retirement to hunt down Bonnie and Clyde, is playing on Netflix now and in theaters in some locales. It stars Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, written by John Fusco of Young Guns fame, directed by John Lee Hancock of The Alamo. It's a really fine movie, a Depression-era Western. You can read my cover story interview with Costner in the current True West, and I don't mean to brag, yes I do, but for the first time, not only my article, but my name is on the cover. Speaking of Netflix, if you haven't caught the Coen Brothers' Ballad of Buster Scruggs yet, what are you waiting for?
Oh, my God, what a great flick. Both of them are good. I just saw the Woody Harrelson one Saturday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the previews of it. I was looking forward to watching it.
It's very, very well done.
Yeah.
Costner is fantastic.
Well, it's a great story.
It is a good
you
story.
You know, I mean, the Bonnie and Clyde story is just phenomenal. And, you know, I mean, you got two guys there who could... They're naturals for that.
But, yeah.
And especially Harrelson, whose dad was in prison in Texas for many years.
For murder.
And, yeah. Yeah. So.
And, you know, but they one thing they did do, and Henry, I'm sure that you'll agree with this, is that they kept really true to the actual characters.
Very much so. And I think very much made up for the wrongs that were done. To the real people's reputations.
Right. Yes,
by
sure.
Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
They made Bonnie and Clyde the movie very dramatic and entertaining, but they used real people's names and they told lies about them. And that's
right.
I'm glad to see they cleaned that up.
Yeah, they did. The movie was quite good. What else have you got for us, sir, Mr. Park?
Well, another westernish movie currently in theaters is The Mustang, about a Nevada convict played by Matthias Schoenaerts or some. Pronunciation like that, who shows great promise working with Wild Mustangs. It's gotten great reviews. It's exec produced by Robert Redford, and Bruce Dern has gotten wonderful notices for his part in it.
And the name is
also
The Mustang?
How old is
the movie
Bruce Dern
is
now?
Just The Mustang.
I think he's 80.
Is Bruce Dern in his 80s? He's not pushing 90, is it? I know he's up there. Because he was
he's in his 80s, yeah. I think. Maybe he just 80.
Yeah. I think when he did Nebraska, he was up there pretty high.
Well, he killed John Wayne. I mean, nobody liked him after that.
That's true.
The country was divided between people who despised him and people who loved him for it.
There you go.
It was kind of a win-lose.
There you go.
The Cowboys, right?
Yeah.
Right. Great picture.
Great movie.
Oh, now, come
the
on.
Deadwood movie.
Are you serious?
It was a good movie.
I hated that movie.
Well, you're one person.
Well, you know, and one of the kids that played the Cowboys was in my high school gym class.
And, really?
Yeah.
Which one?
Mark somebody. I can't think of his name now. And he came to school with a bowl cut haircut.
Yeah.
And we all were making fun of him, right?
Yeah.
This is like 10th grade.
Yeah.
And he kept being shy about it and everything. And he finally, we all found out he was in a movie.
I went to high school with A. Martinez.
Oh, with A?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. His real name is Albert.
I didn't think
I was
going
to say, did he have more letters back then?
Yeah, he did. He did.
He had a B.
He was a soccer player. Anyway, we regress.
Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't like the Cowboys.
I know, you indeed.
All right, Henry. Radio's yours.
Well, I was going to mention that the Deadwood movie, we now have a premiere date on HBO of March 31st.
Okay.
And over the past few weeks for True West, I've had the pleasure of interviewing Calamity Jane, that's Robert Wygert.
Right.
Oscar nominee Brad Dourif, who returns as Doc Cochran. William Sanderson, who plays E.B. Farnham, and may best be remembered for Newhart, where for 7 or 8 seasons he played Larry, the one with two brothers named Daryl.
Daryl and Daryl.
Daryl and Daryl, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I keep trying to decide if he's his generation Strother Martin or Elisha Cook Jr. But
probably Strother Martin.
Oh, he has great stories. He has great stories about working with Chuck Norris, who he really likes, and doing his own stunt work on Lone Wolf McQuade.
Uh-huh.
It just scares me to even think about it. Oh, and I got to talk to Maria Casso, who won an Emmy for Deadwood's production design.
Oh, cool.
And had turned Gene Autry's Melody Ranch into Deadwood twice. This time,
it was tough the first time.
10 years to 1889.
Yeah.
When South Dakota achieved statehood, and she had to deal with the ranch serving as both Westworld and the Django Unchained town in the interim.
Well, that would have been a mess.
Yo, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Although she said that really she was rather complimented how little they changed the way she had set up the town for Deadwood originally, so it wasn't that bad.
Uh-huh.
Now, Bob Brill and I are both big fans of Bob Terry's great YouTube series, The Forsaken Westerns.
Yes.
Which my current True West column is about.
I'm
making my way through all
10
discs of season one.
Yes.
And this morning, I saw an episode where someone actually said, not in jest, I'll head him off at the pass. I have never heard that line said except as a gag before this.
Oh, my God.
You know, this is funny because 8 minutes ago, Jim and I were talking before we went on the air, and I asked him, I said, Henry's going to be on. Has he talked about Forsaken Westerns lately? And because I know I want him to. And he says, I don't think he has. No, he hasn't. And bingo. There you are. You are so prophetic. What can I tell you? did you have a good time?
Doing the interview?
Yes.
Or watching him? What?
Well,
yes.
Yeah. I was very curious as to if you found out where he got this stash or where he keeps getting the stash. Did he unveil that to you?
Not really. He's a long-term collector. He has thousands of films in all different sort of formats, you know, actual 16-millimeter film and videotape and all sorts of stuff. And I think like a lot of collectors, he's kind of protective of it. So he just says, I've been collecting them for years. But
I'm looking forward to the article.
Very interesting guy. And he got into this through the cap gun business.
Really?
Oh. Well, that he really did.
Through the cap gun business.
It kind of makes sense because cap guns have been around since like the 30s.
Little red rolls.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, what he did, he got a hold of the molds for some cap gun companies that were shutting down and started making them himself and started making commercials on YouTube to promote them. And he started hooking them up to these Western TV episodes, and it just sort of grew from there.
Wow. That is interesting. I'd say there's a way to make do with almost anything in this world, isn't there?
There is indeed. Well, and of course, the big news. for next weekend is the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival at William S. Hart Park. You've heard about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about going, too.
Me, too. And, you know, there's so much to see and do there, but the high point for us literary types, of course, is always the Buckaroo Bookshop, where you can meet everyone from Writer's Block, plus authors like J.R. Sanders, Dale Jackson, C. Courtney Joyner, Eric Heisner, Katie Ryan, Janet Squires, Andrea Kidd, and Margaret Brownlee.
And
it's
Al
California's
Bringus.
Western Literary Event of the Year, so you can't miss it.
Right.
And if you, like me, are going to the TCM Classic Film Festival, which is Thursday through Sunday in Hollywood, the great news is there are no Westerns playing on Sunday, so you have no conflict of interest.
Cool. And Henry,
yeah.
You know, to be really honest with you, you know, you have to point out one thing. The real thing
What's that?
Us literary types is the reason we go is the peach cobbler and ice cream and cowboy coffee.
Oh, well, that's
right. And cowboy
and
coffee.
And the blue mugs.
Yeah. The place is famous. The event's famous for its peach cobbler made in those big iron pots. So,
well, what's beautiful about the cups is you buy one and then you get free refills.
There you go. What else can you say? Mm-hmm. I mean, I blow my diet. What can I tell you?
Hey. Yeah,
it's worth it.
You know, 27 cobblers. Not a good idea. Anyway, what else you got, Henry?
Well, actually, that's about it. But
okay.
You can read all about these stories and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Henry. And we will be talking
Thank
to you,
you
the first part of May.
I look forward to it, but I'll be seeing you a week from Sunday.
Actually, not me. I'm
You'll
not going to be there
Jimmy
this year.
Jimmy won't be there.
No. I've got other stuff I have to do. So unfortunately, this year I have to bow out. But I'll be thinking of you.
I will see you.
Yeah, Bob will see you.
Outstanding.
So take care, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Happy trails.
Okay. Thanks, Henry. That's Henry Park.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now let's get to our guest tonight. We've made him wait long enough, I think. We're having a returning guest on tonight. Before he was on, we discussed his brand new novel called Murder Justice. It was the first in a series, the Maggie Lyon series. Maggie is she's an investigative type author, journalist, writer, whatever. And she's married to a chef. And she's just like always in trouble. Patrick lives up in Washington State. And his name is Patrick Brown. And would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Patrick Brown.
Thank you for having me back.
You know, it's a pleasure. Truly. Truly, truly, truly. Okay, now I'm going to talk to you about Ghost Lake real fast.
Sure.
Because that's the book I happen to get into.
Yes, and that one hasn't come out yet.
No, that one is not out yet, but I have to tell you, leave the title. You said that's a working title. Leave the title. It's a great title.
Okay, great, great. I hope it makes sense to you since you've
well,
read
once,
it.
Well, once you get into the book, it makes perfect sense. But I have to tell you, how disappointed am I in what you did with, what's his name, Mark Mario. Oh, my God.
Mark Mario. Well, we don't know what's going to happen with him.
Well, we know he's kind of in Russia almost. We don't know.
I thought we should probably bring them together a little bit and then see what happens, because they're kind of star-crossed. I mean, Maggie has been married for, 25 years?
Right.
But she really hasn't lived with her husband for a lot of that time,
right,
because they've been two independent people who find their own way in life. So.
Yeah, and occasionally get together.
Occasionally.
Yeah, and
of course... children, so they're not long enough to get children in the family.
Right, and this particular novel starts out in Portland, a city that I'm very, very familiar with as far as the Northwest goes. And you've actually captured Washington and Oregon and the border cities of Vancouver and up through the Gresham and that whole area up through there. And I applaud you. Your descriptions are phenomenal, and they're spot on.
Well, thank you. This is a great place to people watch, and there's so much here, from nature to personalities to, you know, just the workings of the Northwest, because the people are wonderful, but they're very different than the people that you find in L.A.
Oh, absolutely.
So I've had a ball getting to know people and just seeing how things work. So I thought, well, putting them there and putting Maggie in that setting, because, you know, here she is. I don't think we really know where Maggie's from originally, but we do know that she's mostly East Coast.
Right.
And that's been her, you know, that's been her background. So to put her, well, I thought to put her in the woods, and the Ghost Lake takes place near where I live in my neighborhood. Uh-huh. It's not my house, but it puts her there and just getting to do all the things. Actually, she has a lot of money at this point, so she gets to do a lot of things that I didn't get to do when it comes to.
Well, if you can't have it, Patrick, write about it. There you go.
Does the people watching get a little challenging? Because my understanding is there's been so much migration to that part of the country, especially from Southern California and other parts of the country.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I first moved into this house, the next door neighbors to the east had just come a few months before from California. I had come from California. The people down at the end of the driveway are from another part of California. And I thought, well, my goodness, there's not anybody here from from Washington or Portland. So it was kind of interesting. But I've figured out who people are, and I know who the natives are, and I know who the imports, the immigrants are. So I could see who the transplants. But the realtor was really funny. He says, we love the people. Just don't get on any committees or boards because we don't want you changing our way of life. So...
Well, you know, one of the things that intrigued me about your story is there's a couple of things there that kind of I identify with. And Jim will agree with this. We're both Italian, so we're both foodies. And you have a chef in the family. And I forever have been pretty much an investigative reporter as in my reporting tasks. And so both those things intrigue me. And I'm kind of wondering... where you fit into those things, where do you draw from on both those elements?
I love to eat. I like to cook. I really like to cook, but I love to eat. I love to try new things and experiment. So when you come to my house, you get something new probably that I haven't done before. Or I'm not one of those people that brings out the practice dish. You may get a disaster, but I want to have something new and exciting. When you come. So I've liked that. I've taken some cooking classes here and there, and I've read those like Heart of a Chef and Soul of a Chef, things like that. I found that very interesting. So when I was looking for someone with Maggie to be with, but also because of the situation she was in, I thought in Murder Justice in the first book, because she was writing a lifestyles piece. And I thought, well,
right.
I can easily see this, and there was a similarity because I wanted to enroll in journalism when I was in high school, and my parents were like, oh, I don't think you should. You should take this class. And so I was kind of steered away from the school newspaper, and I always had this desire to write, but I kind of got out of there. And so Maggie has that in Murder Justice where she really wanted to go into journalism, and she actually – stood her ground and went, but then she finds herself in an era where she's in a, you know, she's locked into a place where there's not much for her to do as an investigative journalist, and she ends up, you know, being a food critic. So that's kind of how it all came to be. And then in Murder Justice, she has one great mystery revealed, and in Pennington's Hoax, she's kind of sitting around addicted to social media for a while until another mystery falls in her lap. And then now she's kind of established. She gets to go on television a lot and talk. She just kind of has a dream life. But she's always in trouble. So she always finds...
Exactly.
Trouble always finds her.
Yeah. Well, it's not hard.
No.
She doesn't make it real difficult for trouble to come her way.
No. And you know, the thing is that sometimes she doesn't ask enough questions. As a reporter, she misses a couple of those things. So she's not the... She's not bad. She's really good at what she does, but she certainly has flaws, and she doesn't quite see it coming
right.
in time to avoid the trouble.
Right.
You know, that's inherent with the job, to be honest with you. I mean,
We all do that. You know, I mean, when you watch a television show like Holmes and Watson or whatever, a procedural, you know, and you do have reporters, it's like they always ask the right questions and they're always getting on top of it. But when you're doing that, you do miss those things occasionally.
Right.
And, you know, a little later on, you think back and say, oh, crap, I should have asked that question. Right. Or, you know, how did I miss that? Because a lot of times you go in and you think you know what you're going after, but you find out more than what you were going after. And
right.
It kind of opens that up. So.
Oh, exactly. And I'm not a mystery solver. You know, mysteries don't fall into my lap. But there was something that happened this week, which was kind of interesting, that somebody had sent a book to me. And because I live in the woods, it didn't arrive correctly. UPS, one driver says, oh, I never drive to that part of the thing. You have to have it delivered to a P.O. box via the street address. And so we've been having this book tracked for weeks. And so I still don't know how it got to me, but it arrived wrapped in local newspaper yesterday with a note of apology. So I really don't know how it got here, but I think I have the mystery figured out, but I really don't know. But I've asked the right questions, and I've kind of come to the right conclusions. But I asked one more person this morning, and it totally threw my whole theory off. So I get that. You try your best, and it's like, well, that doesn't work out. So I have to go back and figure it out. But I am going to find out who had this book.
Oh, okay. Now you have my questioning up. Did the newspaper come wrapped in twine,
or with fish in it?
Yeah. It had a note on it. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize this was your book, even though my name is on the invoice.
Oh, my God. How funny. How funny. Okay, now here's a question I have to ask you. I don't recall if I asked you this last time you were on or not. We always have a lot of fun when you're on the air with us. Do you like Maggie? Do you like her as a person?
I like Maggie a lot. I really do. I find her fascinating. I get a little aggravated with her sometimes because I think she doesn't move at the pace that I think she should move, because I can see what's going to happen, but sometimes she takes me on a ride that I didn't expect. But I like her. I really do like her.
Uh-huh.
And I actually like her husband, even though in the third book I've done some really rotten things to him, but I really do like him as well. He's very charming. They're both charming, and I wish they would find their way together because
he is charming. For somebody who is, you know, affiliated with the Russian mob, he's quite a charming guy.
Well, we don't know that for sure. Before we know that,
but yes, he has
some issues. But that kind of came out because, and the Russian mob will probably come after me at some point because last year I had a neighbor's animals were getting out and eating all my garden, and I was like, oh, I can't believe this, and so. Anyway, I left a note on his locked gate because I couldn't get in. There's no phone number. And I just said, you know, you need to get your fence fixed. And somebody said, oh, I can't believe you did that. I mean, he could be associated with the Russian mob. I'm like, what are you talking about? So it gave me a great storyline after the whole thing. But then I thought, well, you know, I may have gotten myself into trouble and I may have to move. But go into hiding.
But I think the next book should encompass that whole Mark Mario thing.
I
think that's perfect. That's a perfect storyline. Go with that. No.
All right.
You know, Mark.
Well, I always take the advice because Bobby Jean likes the Rena Aiken character, and so when we talked about that last time, I gave her a bigger part in the second book because I thought, well, I liked her too, and if Bobby Jean liked her and a reader likes her, then let's just, you know, let's push that a little bit.
Sure.
You know, one of the things that you do, that I do, and it's, you know, we all have to write at some point our female characters. And being guys writing a female character, sometimes we get criticized for that. I mean, I get the question all the time from certain people in my family who ask, why are you writing from a female lead's position? You know, or your book is about, or your screenplay is about a woman, so you've got to write from a woman's perspective, whether it's a kid, a 16-year-old, or an adult. And it's like, okay, I know why I do it. And is that a challenge for you? I mean, how does that develop for you? Is it an easy thing or a tough thing?
It's actually very easy because I like women. I like to listen and talk to them. And I have, I would say the majority of my closest friends are women. And I know their frustrations. And as you get older, and I'm in my 50s, and I have heard those things from through the childbearing years and raising a family to the empty nesters. It's very interesting how I have been privy to a lot of that conversation. And I think that female characters are oftentimes more interesting than men on so many levels, because there's a whole willingness for them to explore every emotion and be honest with what they're thinking and what they're going through. Whereas guys tend to be, you know, they are one track or not one track, but they kind of stay focused and they're quieter about that and they're sharing. So putting it down on paper, you get a whole lot of Maggie's thoughts come through a lot in these stories. I mean, she's willing to voice what she's feeling and what she's going through. Whereas there's a couple of characters that play out, and even though they're secondary characters, they still don't emote and they still don't express what they're thinking like she does. And even Mark Mario doesn't really tell her. He complains and brings up an argument after 20 years, but she's the one who has been feeling it out for the entire marriage.
Right.
So, yes.
Well, Mark Mario doesn't complain about much. He just sucks it up and quietly goes about his business.
Right. Exactly. So he's not as fraught.
Right.
Mackie is.
Right.
Well, the other interesting thing is you made the male character, half of the team, a chef. And most people that I've talked to over the years have said men are the better chefs, and not because they're better at what they do, but because they're not afraid to experiment. And they become, they create different types of things, and maybe not better, but they do create a really good genre of foods, and I found that fascinating too.
Well, I don't know that I intended to do that as a battle of the sexes situation, but I've always been surprised of young men and guys who like to cook and who do it so well. And there have been times that I've been so surprised. You know, you'll go to someone's house and they'll say, "Oh, my teenage son has been taking this cooking class, and he can," and you think, "I can't believe this kid did anything except play video games." And he turns out, you know, that he's cooked a great meal and been quite outstanding. And you're thinking, well, I think there is that willingness. And yes, I love eating anybody's cooking, but yes, I think that there is kind of a fearlessness probably in the kitchen, because there's not been any inhibitions. There's no expectations,
right?
Maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, don't go away. We're going to cut you off for just a second here. We're going to do a few commercials, and we'll get back to you. So please don't leave.
I won't.
Okay. Has cabin fever got you down? Turn your mind away from winter storms and think spring. Now's the time to refresh your outlook. What events do you have coming up? Outdoor music festival, trip to the mountains, horseback ride adventure. Out West Shop has what you need to revive your spirits and reboot your wardrobe. Cool, hip boho tops, stylish boots from Danpost, and great-looking jackets are just a few of the fashion essentials offered for men and ladies. Find it all at www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free at 877-340-9378. Out West delivers the West door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world. And it's always a great day out West. Hey, J. Michael here for All Dogs Rule. You know, if you are planning a trip and there's no way you can take your little canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. If you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. Acres of play space, grass, orange trees, the gorgeous Sespe River, and all with no strings or stress. And extras if you want, just ask. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100 and your dog will thank you for it. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. So Creative Edge, your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson is your publicist, and you can catch them at Creative Edge. Just do a Google search of Creative Edge Publicity, and you should be able to find them on the net. Give Mickey a call, and he'll do you righteous. And this is LA Talk Radio. It's now 7:30. We are back with our guest tonight, Mr. Patrick Brown. Of course, in studio with Bob Brill and myself, Jim Christina. Hey, Patrick, do you need a publicist?
I would love that if I could afford one, yes.
Actually, Mickey is very affordable.
Yeah, very, very affordable.
True story. I'll email you all his information.
Oh, please do.
Yeah,
please
Bob
do.
And I both, Mickey is our publicist, both of us. So, yeah, you can't go wrong with Mick, and he's got some great testimonials, and he does some New York Times best-selling authors on down. So he's a hard-working dude.
Oh, excellent, because that's the worst thing is having to do your own marketing and do your own promotion and stuff.
Well, so, you know, shameless self-promotion is the key when you're writing books. Because the publishers don't do it anymore, unless you're John Stanford or James Patterson or somebody, one of those guys. Yeah, I know.
Well, right, because I watch CBS Sunday Morning and they always have a wonderful, you know, book segment and thinking, well, who's that? Well, it's the parent company of the CBS or a subsidiary. Right. I'm thinking, well, right. I need somebody to do that.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, and check him out. He's a good guy. Okay, back to if you want to call and talk to Patrick tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And you can actually talk and call and talk to Patrick live on the air. Yay. Okay. As we're getting into now, when you write your dialogue, I noticed that your dialogue is pretty snappy, and it was in your very first novel, and I think we mentioned it back then, and it didn't lose anything in the third one. I did not read the second one, but the third one, The Ghost Lake, it's as snappy as it was, and that's a testament, I think, that you paying attention to business, which is really good for you. Now, that being said, can you give a new writer what's the word I want, Bob?
Advice.
Thank you. You know, my head is stuffy and it's really hard to think. Advice on how to keep dialogue fresh and clean and consistent. That's very important.
Well, you know, it's interesting because 20 years ago when I was writing, I had a cousin who's about my age and she was in college as an English major. And she said, well, I like your stuff, but you don't write dialogue. And I was like, because I'm afraid of it.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was one of those things that between the punctuation, the getting the format right, and that's one of the key points. But the other is you really have to listen to how people speak. And I have done some read-throughs of preliminary, you know, first and second draft plays and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And people speak in contractions. So when you're writing and you're trying to communicate that well with that rhythm of words and the descriptions, but then when you break into dialogue, I have to know where each of those characters is coming from. I know that Rena Aiken, who is Maggie's agent, I know
right.
that she's from New York. She sounds a lot like one of my very good friends who's from New York. And I just have to hear her speaking in my head. And there are those other characters kind of have to come through. Mark Mario is an interesting thing because he was the more challenged to find a rhythm for him. But his fights with Maggie, though, I mean, their arguments and that sort of thing, that kind of came out. But then the action's just taking place in my head, and I'm kind of dictating what they're talking about and arguing with each other about. But then it's just that you know, it's that constant revision of trying to see if I've got that right, because you'll read it through about the fourth or fifth time and think, oh my gosh, that sounds so formal,
right?
That they never would have spoken. A married couple of 25 years would never speak. They probably wouldn't even speak that respectful of each other, just in the, you know, past the gravy or whatever. I mean,
right.
It's going to be a little more sharp. So it's just, yes. Yeah. So for anybody who's doing it, I think you just have to keep doing it over and over and really listen to the conversations that you have, the conversations that the people around you are having. I love to listen in on conversations on trains and restaurants and that sort
you
of thing.
Bad boy.
Oh, I take notes.
So. You know, one of the interesting things about it, too, is that, you know, in writing a screenplay versus a novel and getting more novelish in, or getting more screenplayish in writing a novel, is that sometimes the loudest words that are that you'll hear are the ones that are never spoken. And so when you write a description, somebody's going to say something, you may not write the actual dialogue, but you kind of say what they're going to say in your description, which is always the tricky part, too, because, you know, dialogue is fun. I mean, I think I love writing dialogue more than anything else, and that's always the big trouble, because you write too much of it.
Well, yes, because you can end up and your whole chapter is almost dialogue. You're thinking, well, they've done nothing except this scene, and we haven't moved anything further along than this, you know, basically a 10-minute discussion.
Right.
So you have to kind of move out of there and go back and pull some of that. But I was never a playwright, but a good friend of mine who is with my publisher as well, and we've never met, but we talk on the phone and communicate, you know, several times a month. And that's Lonnie Grundis. And he said, you know, you should get into playwriting. And so I was hesitant at first. And he says, but your dialogue, you really should do this. So I looked at that format and how to do all that, you know, the staging part of it, because that was something that was new to me. And so we co-wrote a play called, it's in the French title, but it's a farce. It's English, but My Uncle and Me, Mon Oncle et Moi. And we have submitted that, and it's funny, but we have enjoyed the dialogue and we've shared working on each act. And I'm working on a play on my own right now called Golden Jubilee. It's another female character, but it's a female character who's reflecting on the last 50 years of a marriage and dealing with her beliefs. So that dialogue, I just love to write it. And I'd love to do more playwriting.
Is that where you're going next?
I still have some Maggie stories to tell, and I still have some other short stories and maybe a novel or two, but I really do love playwriting. Oh, I would love to do that.
Okay. Now, did you ever have writer's block? And if you did, how did you get out of it? And if you didn't, okay.
Yes. I do, but it's one of those secrets that nobody likes to talk about because you want to sound like you're performing all the time.
Well, yeah, it's a dirty little secret.
But usually when I have it, it's usually a sign that I need a break. I'm either tired, I haven't, you know, it's like I've had shorter nights or something, not enough sleep, or I've just finished something. I think that when I finished The Ghost Lake and sent it to the publisher, I was traveling for the next 2 weeks. So I didn't write during that time at all. And then I came back and I thought, oh, I'm going to jump right into that next outline for the next Maggie. I'm just going to get ahead of the game and write that out now. And then I just didn't feel like it. I could not think of an idea. I know what's kind of going to happen, but I couldn't really do it. And I find that if I do something physical, whether it's, you know, shoveling compost or going out and cutting down trees or chopping firewood or
clearing brush,
drawing, or anything that distracts my brain for enough time, some idea will come to me and I'll be able to write pretty soon after that. But sometimes you just need a break. And
yeah.
I think that that's usually a sign that it's time for me to slow down.
Well, that's actually a good answer. I mean, Bob and us, we're looking at each other going, yeah, that's kind
real.
Of that's kind of like us. Bob and I both write
and I
westerns.
I love to talk on the phone, so usually I'll call somebody up and I'll bother them and make them call me up and talk to me for a long time. It's something that just relaxes my brain, and yeah. then they may even tell me some good, nice, juicy story that I can take notes on, and then I'll maybe incorporate that later.
Aha. Uh-huh. And you've never given up your day job.
Right now, this is kind of the majority of what I do. So, yes. So I'm just constantly writing and working on the land and whatnot.
Uh-huh. And I was telling Bob before we went on the air that you kind of live out in the boonies in Washington State. So,
yes. Which actually has its pros and cons, because I've cranked out more stuff in the last 3.5 years. Living here, I have been able to, I mean, gosh, that's 3 books. Well, there's a 4th manuscript out there, and then the plays, and I'm working on a piece that I was going to do as an essay, but it's turned into a 45-page memoir. So it's kind of, I take 1 page out and add 2. So as I edit it down, it keeps growing. But so it's a great creative place. There's a great bobcat and some deer that walk by my office window. So I get a nature show periodically, and that's nice. But the other thing is I'm very isolated, so when you do want to go sit and have a cup of coffee and eavesdrop over somebody's conversation, that's you have to plan that.
So. It's no walking to the corner to the Starbucks.
Yeah. No, so, no.
have you ever done a ride-along or anything with an investigative journalist, just out of curiosity?
No, but that would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Well, I'm see how sure you could probably figure it out. I've never have.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to, I would imagine. I don't know what your local newspaper is up there, but just to get a little extra feel. I mean, to me, it's fun. I mean, it's something I've kind of always done since I got into journalism. When I first got into radio, it's like one of my passions, and it's just a lot of fun to do. It's difficult. It's like, only because, you know, you're always afraid of, did I draw the right conclusion, you know, or the facts there, you know? And so, but which always kind of gets you into trouble. But I was just kind of curious.
I'm writing that down, actually, because I think that's a great idea.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I have another great idea for you.
Yes.
All right. Right now, as you're sitting down, this is where the wine came in. You probably should have gotten some before you started. While you're sitting there, give Bob and I and our 600,000 plus listeners a 1 minute commercial on what's her name, Maggie Lyon and her stories. Go,
Maggie Lyon. All right, Maggie Lyon. She's somewhere in her 40s, maybe early 50s. She was a frustrated journalist. She's very talented. She has ghostwritten books. She's trying to finally step out and make it on her own. And she is a person who does not seek trouble, but trouble finds her. And she finds ways to solve those mysteries. But when she doesn't think anything else and she thinks she's going to settle down into a pretty quiet life after that, some mysterious phone call, some assignment, something falls into her lap, and she may end up being kidnapped and held under a cellar or in a cellar under the house. She may end up on the top of a skyscraper. She may end up, who knows, running through the woods in the middle of the night. We don't know what she's going to be doing, but she gets out of it, and she doesn't have to have a man to save her. She's pretty resilient. A female may help save her, but she pretty much is her own heroine. She doesn't really require any codependence.
Very good.
Chased by a bobcat outside your window.
Chased by a bobcat.
yes.
Watching the nearest neighbors frolic in their hot tubs.
The ex-Californians.
So we know kind of know what's next for Patrick Brown. What are you going to be reading next, Patrick?
Do you know what? I love the library system here. It's the Fort Vancouver library system. And I heard on one of your recent episodes, you asked the guest if he liked the Kindle versus the real book. And I like the real book, by the way, for a lot of reasons. And the other thing is, but he did make the point that you that you can only have so many books in your house. And my dad used to say that, and he went and started going to the library, and I thought, I don't know. But now I'm doing it, and I do it. So after I watched the Durrells and Corfu on PBS, which was kind of funny, and the author Lawrence Durrell and Gerald Durrell, it's my friends, my family and other animals. So I'm picking that up tomorrow at the library. So that will be my
next week read. Oh, okay. I happen to know two good books that are out right now. You can probably get them online very easily. One is called Lancer, Hero of the West, The New Orleans Affair, and the other one is called Jefferson's Chance.
Yes, I've heard you talking about the second one. So yes, I'm going to look at both of those.
They're both available on Amazon or from the author's website.
Or if you're really, really, really nice, one could show up in your mailbox. But I won't send it UPS.
Well, then I'll come back on and I'll talk about it.
There you go.
I think that sounds wonderful.
There you go. Anyway, so we now know that what you're going to be reading. What's on your nightstand right now?
Actually, it's a French textbook. So, but there is actually, I always have this book that I've been slowly reading. It's called Encyclopedia of the Exquisite. And it is by, what is your name? Jessica Kerwin Jenkins. And it's a beautiful designed hard copy. And it's just of the wonderful things in the world that she makes sound even better, like hot air balloons and, I don't know, ice cream sundaes. So it's just chapter by chapter of really beautiful things that we overlook in life.
Gotcha. Why don't you spend a minute and give a new writer and one of our listeners some advice on how to get started writing?
Oh, gosh. I think you just have to do it and not worry if it's going to be good or bad. You just have to get it down on paper. And there was a young writer who came to me last year and said, I have nine chapters. And it's like, well, no, you have nine pages, but you have to do a little bit more. But flesh out those stories and really just practice writing. I think you just have to do it every day, whether it's just a few minutes, because it's the only way that you get stronger. And if you read some of the awful stuff that I wrote out, when I started, I would just get, that was back in the days of the word processor, and you didn't have paper to waste or anything, so you just typed and typed and typed, and gosh, this, the format is so bad, this is, the dialogue is awful, but it was that thing that, you know, you go to the gym, and the first day of the gym, you can't lift the big weights, so I think you just have to build up to it, and you get better, and I think even if you have a book come out, you still have to keep writing, and you still get better and better after each. You can't expect perfection.
Well,
and not be afraid of it, and not let that inner voice tell you that you can't do it. You just have to keep doing it.
Exactly. And Bob and I are both subscribed to the theory that the more books you have, the better you're a writer.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Yes.
And we're out of time with you, Patrick. So,
you're kidding?
No,
this has been a pleasure.
Your books are, of course, there you go. Your books are The Murder Justice, Pennington's Hoax, and your newest one that is not out yet is Ghost Lake. They are all available on all online booksellers and from Amazon.com. And why don't you give our listeners where they can get a hold of you, Patrick?
All right. Well, I do a blog. Because I've been writing, I haven't been faithful to the blog, but it's called One More Thing to Read. And it's available at www.writtenbypatrickbrown.com. I'm on Twitter at Patrick Wrote. I'm on Instagram. I have a Facebook page called Written by Patrick Brown. And you can private message me through any of those if you have questions. And, I'm also on Goodreads through the author page, but I think you just go on there. The people who really read a lot are on that.
Yeah.
And you can ask me questions through there, which I always love to get questions. I haven't had any in a while, but I love getting them. And that's pretty much it.
Well, we ask you a lot.
I haven't given you my cell phone number, but that's probably not something you want.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your day and joining us on the craziness that is the Writer's Block. And we sure want to thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely a pleasure. come back and visit us. Now, we'll be taking a bit of a hiatus after the end of June, but we will be back, and we will be having you. Actually, the name of the show is going to change a little bit. It will be called The Writer's Block One-on-One. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
So anyway, thanks again for joining us, and everybody, this is Patrick Brown and his books about Maggie Lyon, the Maggie Lyon Mysteries. Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Patrick Brown. Great guy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Very informative.
Tonight went zing.
I know. It's gone. You know? And we had Henry, too.
And we had Henry as well. So, I mean, you know, holy mackerel. And, of course, you have the Cowboy Festival coming up next week.
Yep, next week.
And next Tuesday, we have Judy Fisher.
Ooh.
She will be here in studio. Or not in studio. She'll be on phone. But she'll be preparing. She has a show to do, and she's preparing to come out here for the Cowboy Festival. She'll be here or be on the show next Tuesday, regular time, 7 o'clock.
And the cool thing about the Cowboy
Festival. Bobby G will be in studio with me.
The cool thing about the Cowboy Festival this year, I can't emphasize this enough to people that I've talked to, is it's free.
Right.
It's absolutely free.
Absolutely
no admission, walk in, you know, the whole nine yards.
All the shows are free.
Yep.
All you have to do is, the only thing is you got to pay for the cherry or peach cobbler if the Buckaroo Bookshop leaves any left. Because trust me, having been there 10 years in a row, you eat a lot of it.
Yep. And the thing about it is, on top of everything else, we're giving away a bunch of books.
This year, everybody's giving away books.
Yeah, and so there's a big contest. You don't have to be there to claim it. You just got to be there to enter. You know, and I know I'm giving the whole 5 Lancer books as a series, and everybody's...
Maybe I'll bring in some Jefferson's Chance for you to put on your table, and you don't have to sell them. Just give them away.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do it for you.
I'd love to get them out there.
Yeah, no worries.
When I first came out in February, I gave 10 of them away. Of course, 6 of them were to my family. Of course, they all said, well, I want one, you know. So. Anyway, next Thursday, Bob, is John Hagenberger.
Okay.
You don't know John Hagenberger, but he is an absolute, he's a kick.
Cool, looking forward to it.
He's a kick. He's a lot of fun. He writes about a 1950s P.I.,
oh, I love it.
And, oh, my God, his office is in the back of the Brown Derby. This John is just a terrific guy, and you'll love talking to him, trust me. And that's it for us tonight. Bobby Jean couldn't be with us. She is getting ready to come out here to the West Coast. But for Bob Brill, myself, Jim Christina, we are out of here.